You're listening to 90 Day Soulmate with the relationship engineers, Jim Golnick and Lisette Guevara, only on LA Talk Radio. Welcome to 90 Day Soulmate with Lisette
and Jim.
Today we're talking about the broken mirror, how our own thoughts distort reality, and what you can do about it. Well, you can't really do anything about my thoughts, can you?
No.
No. But yours?
Yes.
So we were having this conversation the other day that people see and judge the emotions of others or anything. They judge anything not based upon what the actual reality is, but what they believe, right?
Yes, and kind of projection. Yourself and others.
The projection, go back to the projection of yourself on others, is that we can only understand or see, we can only observe what we first understand. So, we have a lot of stuff in this show today. This is a really cool show. That when we look at somebody and we see them as being angry or upset or as happy, they actually may be that way. But at the same time, we may be projecting our own anger, our own happiness on them. And there's actually a study done where a psychologist took a bunch of people, and we've talked about this study before, and they put them through a sad scene. And then they put them in front of a screen watching a movie of an actor that has no emotion on their face. And they asked the people who saw the sad scene, what's the emotion of this person? And they'd say, oh, the actor's sad. You know, they're going through this. And then they had other group of people go through a happy scene and then see the same actor with no emotion. And they're like, oh, he's happy. And so this was a big study that was done, and it was been, what is it called, referenced or used as a reference in many different papers. It is to show that the state of the observer is put upon the face of the observed when reading that person's emotion, if there's an absence of a very strong emotion, meaning if somebody has a neutral face, we tend to project our own emotions on them.
Yeah.
So we project our own causes. We project our own how they should be feeling. We just talked about that we have an experiment, which we're going to talk about in a minute here, where one person watches another, and that person is seeing a picture on a screen. And now I'm watching the person who's watching the picture on the screen. I don't see what's on the screen. I see that person. And I will write down how I think they feel when they see the picture on the screen. We'll talk about that a little bit more in detail. But what we found is that people were actually not that good at finding the emotion that the other person said they were feeling. So they wrote down their feeling. The person who was observing wrote down the feeling. And again, we'll get into that. Let's look at the impact of the situation. So we want to see what can create people's emotions and how they feel and how they act. So a couple of things. So the impact of the situational attributes and environmental conditions on the behavior of people. So we think that once somebody has an emotion, that tends to cause them to react a certain way. Well, they're also influenced in acting by the situational attributes that are provided by the environmental condition. It will impact the behavior of the individual. And we can talk about this, and this was part of a presentation that I did internationally on architectural design, where it was to talk about how the way a building is designed, from the colors to the shapes to the transparencies to the textures, can impact the occupants and how they feel in the workplace.
Yeah.
From a standpoint of well-being, Do they show up on time? Are they directed to the right spot? Do they have the right feeling that goes along with that type of business? In a medical office, do they feel safe and secure?
Clean.
Oh, does it feel clean?
Yeah, because it is sanitized in one area that you may be.
So we basically take buildings and make costumes of them to portray archetypal, I'm making up a word now, archetype type buildings. Like if a building's a medical facility, it should have these attributes. If it's a police or
hotel
yeah. or fancy restaurant, it should have these things in it. Feel the environment of what they're in, and then they have the emotions of that environment, and then they behave as if they were in that environment. And these are all programmed by the environment and the situation. However, people arrive into these environments in their own body, and their body brings with it their personalities.
Emotions.
The emotions, right? The id, the ego, the superego, all those things, the ancient innate drives and passions and desires, as well as our subconscious values and beliefs that kind of tailor our behavior, and our prefrontal cortex. You know, we'll talk about that as being our ego, our ability to make judgment right now. And I think something we've talked about in the past, based upon these things, your emotional context right now from whatever is going on in your life, whether it's from a long history or if it's an instant thing that just happened before you got here. I almost got in a car accident. I'm so upset. Yeah. Or I'm so happy I didn't get hurt. You know, that is brought into the situation. I'm in love. I'm in love. I can't think straight. My logic has gone out the window. Now I'm going to act differently. So if we're trying to see if we're trying to project on someone else, or if we're trying to understand, how they're acting, we're taking all of ourself and projecting it on them and thinking of how we would react in their situation. And we may be thinking they're reacting like we are reacting, and therefore these are the reasons they're acting that way. And it has nothing to do with that most of the time.
And this is what you call broken mirror, yeah?
Broken mirror, that we are projecting our own beliefs, thoughts, and biases on the other person's action. Basically, we're looking at ourselves in the mirror, and it is not even an accurate reflection of ourselves.
So, and we start to assume, this is the other point. So you go to some meeting and you see that, and you assume the person is upset or the person is, and then you act in different, and maybe you don't be in the right emotion.
Like if somebody acts like a tennis ball and someone acts like a racket, they end up hitting each other. One hits the other. That I see this as we play parts. And I think we can get into this in a second here. I want to see if I have it on the next slide because, well, we don't have it on the next slide. So I'm going to the third slide now. The third slide has it. So when we're talking about insights from experiments and current research on behavior, Milgram was the one who did the test. It was a test, the experiment on authority, which had to do with people in a medical type environment being told to shock people. It was a fake setup, but they were told to shock people as part of a learning instruction because it was a psychological program. There was a person in a white outfit. They were told to do this. This was what do we call it? It's when you follow authority. So that was a situational context that enabled people to be studied in how they act when someone's telling them to do something under the setting of the medical environment. Where I wanted to go with this is this page, which talks about we go into these situational environments and these influences that are happening in these environments impact people differently for a number of reasons. One, there's personality variables. There's the big five: extroversion, agreeableness, conscientiousness, openness, and neuroticism. And we can stop there for a moment, right, and go, let's just look at personality as a moderator of how people act in the same situation. Somebody who might be an extrovert, have extroversion, they like to go and talk and be, they may act a certain way in a situation, ask questions, talk to, involve and connect, where an introvert may be, I'm just going to sit back and analyze the situation. So that might be one reason they act differently in a similar situation.
A similar situation, yeah.
And let's talk about the next thing, agreeableness, right? If somebody is agreeable, maybe they want to go along with something, like they want to go along with the team. They want to go along with the group and what the group is doing, where somebody's not agreeable, maybe they'll go, no. And so you say you have somebody who's not agreeable, but they're an introvert. Maybe they're thinking no, but they don't say anything. Where you have somebody who is not agreeable and an extrovert, they may say, hey, whoa, 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 no, let's talk about that. Where an introvert will be like, let me think about that to myself and not share it with anyone.
Mm-hmm.
So this is already starting to get into how people respond differently. So even if you have a situation, different responses. Now, going back to the mirror piece, if I don't know my personality because I don't really know myself, how can I even begin to fix this broken mirror?
Yeah.
How can I realize what I am observing is not due to all my biases? And maybe by understanding that what I am observing is because of all my biases,
mm-hmm.
I can start to chip away at my biases. Yeah?
Yeah.
Sounds like something for me. How about conscientiousness?
Mm-hmm.
Conscientiousness. People may act differently in a situation. Hey, you know, everybody's taking one. No one's here. Yeah, but conscientiousness, I have integrity. I can't do it. Where somebody else may say they have a little bit lower conscientiousness and say, well, everyone else is doing it, why don't I do it?
Mm-hmm.
It's called the bandwagon, you know, everyone else is doing it, why not do it? How about openness? Openness to new experience. Hey, let's all go and skydive today. Whoa, 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 I don't want to skydive. Where someone else may be, yeah, whee! Wait, you need a parachute.
You want a chicken.
Fly. And then neuroticism or being even keeled, right? That if you're reacting emotionally and stressed and anxiety, that person will act a certain way. And when they see something happening, they may put their anxiety on the other person going, oh my, they must be in a bad situation. Where I know people who do things that I'm like, there's no way I would do that because that makes me anxious. And then are they not feeling anxious when they're doing what they're doing?
You know, it's not aware.
So that was just personality. And those are just a couple of the concepts of personality, right? So let's go to the next piece. How about subconscious programming? The superego. Your values, beliefs, patterns, and programs, the ingrained societal, religious, cultural, and family influences in your life. That's how you'll judge. And you won't even know that you're judging for those reasons. It will just be like, oh, this is what's going on with that person. And again, it's a mirror of your, in this case, subconscious, your subconscious programming, that you see things based upon the subconscious programming. And you think it's just objective observant.
Yeah.
Right? It's an objective observance, and it isn't. What's next on there? We also have state of consciousness, and we were talking about that a little while ago. Ego. Are you healthy? Are you well rested? Are you sober? Are you emotionally level? Do you have reduced prefrontal cortex engagement? Are you in love? Are you angry? Are you having a lot of emotion which stops your front part of your brain from being able to clearly analyze information? This will impact how you perceive others' behavior.
And so sometimes it's not easy for everybody to recognize how I feel. I listen to people that say, someday I feel like they're angry. I don't know why. And I start to acting angry with everybody. But the person knows it's my anger, but I don't know right now why. So and then maybe in the 2-3 day, people, if it's half out observation, like they always pointing, got it. Oh, I know why I was angry, because I start to take care of something that nobody take care of, whatever is the point.
So it's a subconscious feeling of anger and not knowing why, because it's suppressed. It's not conscious at this point.
And then you project to everybody and you believe everybody's angry.
Also. Or the other is, I've only slept 3 hours a night for the last couple of nights. I'm unrested. I'm edgy. I've been drinking a lot of coffee. I haven't been eating well. My sinuses are stuffed. And now I'm making objective observations of other people's behavior. No, I'm not. Am I?
Let me play Angry Bear.
How about our innate drives and desires, or our id? Our emotions boiling up from millions of years of evolutionary programming and survival instincts. So are these things that are out of our control pushing us to making judgments and observing behavior?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Obviously, we all know this because we've been studying 90 Day Soulmates show for the last couple of years. That's great. So these things all are impacting us. And sometimes we have to take a step back and go, you know what? They are. And I don't know they are. Or I do know they are, but I don't know how they're impacting me differently than they're impacting you. You know, how would you feel if you were in my shoes? And we talked about that too. You know, you don't know how they feel until you walk a mile in their shoes. You've heard that expression.
It's a high heel?
Well, the point was, and we were talking about this before the show, is that if I'm in Lizette's shoes, seeing what she's observing right now, if I don't have all the subconscious programming, if I don't have all the same evolutionary biology that Lizette does, that if I don't have the same cultural background, if I don't have all the educational background, if I don't have all the life experiences that Lizette does, until I have all that, I'm not going to view things the way she does. And even if I have all that, but my brain function is different, if my personality traits are different, if I've been drinking or smoking or tired or I've been unhealthy this week or I have something else going on in my life, I still will not see the same things the same way as Lizette does. Right? Yes, I can never do it. And then what's last on this list? We have the group or individual. So are we an individual when we're witnessing these things, when we're reacting? Are we in a group? Is, you know, the group or individual piece is part of the environment and situational domain. However, there is harmonic interaction and group dynamics in reaction. And we were talking about this a couple of days ago, is that you can have one note, and how many notes does one note have? And one note has one note. But when you have a second note, for those of you who are musicians out there, two notes have two different frequencies, but then there's a resonance or a harmonic between them, which is the difference of the frequency, as well as the summation of the frequency and the subtraction. I mean, there's all these other things. And then beyond that is all those other harmonics that are produced also interact with the original. And basically, when you have one note, you have one thing. When you have two notes, or two people,
infinite. It
becomes infinite. So Lizette and I can have infinite ideas. That individually we can have ideas and we can think we're widening our perspective. But when we take two perspectives, not only do we have all the perspectives between ours, but now we can go beyond in each direction, kind of like that, what is that called, where you do surround sound with your TV? It has two speakers, but all of a sudden the sound sounds like it's coming from over here and over here. You can't do that with one speaker. You can't throw sound over here or over here with one speaker. You need two. Once you have two speakers, the sound can come anywhere, from anywhere in the room, because of the waves and how they interfere and add to each other. The point being is that in a circumstance and situation with multiple people, the behaviors become more and more complex, and you can never really figure out what's going to happen in a group dynamic situation.
Yeah.
We'll talk more about this when we come back on 90 Day Soulmate with Lizette
and Jim.
Tired of attracting the wrong type of guy, it was time to give something else a try. She got her computer and started to plan and created a process to find her man. Soon she went on a perfect date. And then she knew it must be fate. In just 90 days, that is all it took. How she found her match? It is in the book.
90 Days Soulmate is brought to you by 90 Days Solutions.
Welcome back to 90 Days Soulmate with Lizette.
And Jim.
A number of years ago, Lizette and I wanted to do an experiment at a library with a group that we were working with. And the experiment was, let's see how well people can read the emotion on the face of others. Dr. Paul Ekman has came up with many years ago, the seven universal emotions that are on the face of all people in all environments and all cultures everywhere. And they have to do with happy, sad, angry, disappointed, surprised, shock,
and
the contempt was one, which was kind of, or disgust was one that's a little off-putting. Yeah. But let's go to the actual experiment and then we'll talk about it. So the experiment was, participants were split and paired into a picture observer and observer of the observer. So if you see this picture here, it shows a projection of a baby's face on a screen. It shows somebody looking at it, a man looking at it, and a woman taking notes as she is observing the man. What the woman is doing is writing down the emotion, one of these six emotions, either happy, sad, fear, disgust, anger, or surprise, the six emotions that Dr. Paul Ekman said are universal. How well can she read them on the face of the other as he sees a picture on the screen? The picture on the screen is to be an emotionally inducing picture, to induce happy, scared, sad, just one of the emotions. And so we did this experiment where we had the observers do this. And as we go to the what is it called, the actual emotions they had to write down. They had to write down, did they think the person was happy, sad, were they fearful, were they disgusted, angry at the picture, or surprised? And it was to understand instantly if people could really quickly assess how another person was feeling when they looked at a picture. Mm-hmm. So we showed these pictures and we had the one person write down the feelings of the other as they looked on the picture. And the person who was looking at the picture also wrote down what they were feeling for these 10 pictures or 20 pictures, whatever the case was. Here are the pictures that we used in the library photos. I don't even have to describe the pictures. I'm just going to put it. And we're just allowing people to come up with whatever their emotions are. And we'll go right through these pictures. Some of them are immediately emotionally producing of some emotion. We're not even going to share with you what we thought the emotions were going to be of people. And it actually didn't matter what we thought. But here are the pictures. And I guess it's kind of hard, maybe on your phone, if you're watching on your phone, to see those pictures. But there were a set of pictures that were put in front of the one person who was watching the pictures. And they were writing down their emotions as they saw the pictures. Just one emotion. And the observer of that person was also writing it down. What did we find out?
That's interesting. Yeah. We repeat also the
we flipped it. We flipped it around because the people who were observing the faces, they didn't know what picture the person was looking at. Mm-hmm. So we flipped them and did it the opposite way as well. What we learned was that there was not a good correlation. People did not predict the emotion of others accurately. Mm-hmm. That when somebody said, oh, they look like they're happy looking at that picture and wrote down happy, the other person could have written down happy, but they could have written down sad or angry. Mm-hmm. And this was just what they were feeling, not what they thought the person in the photo was feeling, but their feeling at looking at the picture, or what the person thought when they were watching the person who was looking at the picture.
Yeah.
So it was, they were not correlating well. And we're like, this is odd. We would have thought that with everyone having this universal facial
expression
of emotion, that people would be good at doing this. We didn't find that, but we found out something interesting.
Mm-hmm. What is?
Which was that the person saw the other person's face and wrote down happy. That turned out to be a good predictor of themselves when they saw the same photo. That they more accurately predicted their own emotion of seeing that photo when they saw that photo than the other person claimed to be feeling when they saw that photo. It was very odd. It was as if they were able to read their own emotion of seeing a photo that they weren't even looking at while looking at somebody else. And that, I think, if you look at our conclusion of that, and that's not a full conclusion, but our conclusion is that when you see somebody and you assume their emotional state, you are more likely projecting your own emotional state on their face in every circumstance than it is their true emotion. Unless they're saying, I am angry, and yelling. That if you are taking a relatively neutral face and you're assuming an emotion, mm-hmm. most of the time, it's your emotion, not theirs.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of assumption done.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. That's tough. Not tough, it's interesting. So something I found interesting. Mm-hmm. We were talking about the people who were shown a sad movie, then seeing the neutral face, and they would go, oh, that guy's got a sad face. And this is, again, another experiment that shows how you feel before you see a neutral face. Your feeling makes you think that neutral face has the same feeling you have.
Mm-hmm.
So here's something which I call proximity. So that can be recency or proximity, meaning how close was something else to this, and how does that change what we think? And this is an example. This has to do with colors, but hopefully this will make sense from an emotion standpoint, if I can get to the right thing here. All right. So if you look on the left, there's a square, a big square that looks like it's kind of cyan. It's a color that's used in printing called cyan. When you zoom in on it, it's actually green and blue squares, but a lot of them close together. The proximity of the green to blue and how close they are together make you see them as cyan, although they are actually green and blue. And we'll go on and look at similar things with other colors as well. Here is purple. It looks like a big purple square, but when you zoom in, it's actually blue and red squares. The proximity of the one color to the other color, when we look at it together, gives us a false perspective of what it really is. And lastly, we have green and red together when zoomed out, where you look at that big square. The big square looks like it could be yellow or gold, but it really only is green and red. The point of it is that our own feelings will change what we think the other person's feelings are. Just like our perspective of color is judged by what is near it.
Mm-hmm.
So if we're looking at somebody, and this can be somebody's in a room and we see them having a certain emotion, but that emotion can be triggered by a chair in the room that we don't like. There's something in the room we don't like, and now we're associating with the person. It has to do with proximity. Mm-hmm. So it can be the recency of an emotion, or it can be the proximity of other stimulus that is then associated with what you're seeing. You know, so it's mm-hmm. it's like this weird stuff. You remember how, like, in marketing they'll have, and of course I know a lot of you don't remember this, Michael Jackson used to do Pepsi commercials, and I think it was Pepsi, but it was like Michael Jackson and Pepsi. Who cares? I mean, he's drinking Pepsi. He's holding up the Pepsi can. The point of it is, in our brains, we would then associate Michael Jackson, King of Pop, with Pepsi. Oh my gosh, Pepsi's fantastic. And we're associating something based upon proximity. We're not, he's not saying this is the best tasting cola, but he was just close to it. So objects that are close to another object will change how we feel about the one object. You go into a scary room and there's a looming figure because it's dark in the room. You're going to have a different feeling emotionally about that figure than if it's the exact same figure and it's a bright church and it's somebody in a flowing robe is going to look different than a dark house that's, quote, a haunted house with the same figure walking through it. It is the proximity of other stimulus that cause us to change how we see things. I love this because this was part of what I would call the blue dress. If you remember a couple of years ago, there was the blue dress. I looked at this and I tried to create a picture of colors and the effect that other things that are nearby have on it. So if you look at these two things here, you see a big, thick red lines and big, thick purple lines. And then in between, you see potentially colors. What colors do you see there?
Magenta and red.
But go for the thin color, the thin color up here.
Maybe gray.
Okay, so you see gray. So I see it as blue or cyan.
Okay.
And then the other color I see is green, so the thin colors. Mm-hmm. However, I created this, and then all I did was zoom in. When you zoom into the picture, the blue above is green. It's the exact same color as below. Again, above, which looks like blue, is actually the same color as below. It's hard to comprehend, but it's the same color, exactly the same color. Why is that important? Is that proximity of something to something else. It can be emotion, it can be time, it can be another object, it can be memory that pops up into your head because of another object in the room, or because of something else that's going on in your life, or because of another emotion, or because of a relationship you're in. It can be anything. Anything can change the perspective of what we're seeing. And that is what we call the proximity effect. When we come back, we're going to talk about a couple of other things that in our mind changes what we see based upon false evidence that appears real. Be back right after this message.
Tired of attracting the wrong type of guy, it was time to give something else a try. She got her computer and started to plan and created a process to find her man. Soon she went on a perfect date, and then she knew it must be fate. In just 90 days, that is all it took. How she found her match? It is in the book.
90 Days Soulmate is brought to you by 90 Days Solutions.
Welcome back to 90 Days Soulmate with Lizette
and Jim.
Today we're talking about the broken mirror, how we perceive things around us based upon our own internal self, and we project that on what we're observing, and it's not actually the real reality, but it's what we think the reality is. How do we ever know what's real?
Never.
So we're going to talk about some terms now, some terms that if we can get an understanding of may help us think about this in a little bit more deep manner. We can dive into it. Let's look at projection, and we talked about projection. We have a distorted perception. We project our own feelings and experiences onto others, leading to misinterpretation of their actions. We reinforce our own biases. That when we project, it reinforces our existing biases, creating a feedback loop that distorts reality. Meaning, we see people doing actions based upon what reasons we think they're doing them, and then it reinforces the biases we already have. Oh, they did that because of that. That's my bias. I'm going to keep it. And then conflict creation. Misunderstandings and conflicts arise when we assume that others share our perspectives. So when somebody isn't doing what we would do in their situation, we think that they have our same perspective. We think they're doing something wrong. They're coming from their own perspective. They may actually be doing the right path. They may be choosing the right thing.
Mm-hmm.
So that was projection. We can talk about environments. So the environments that we talk about. Contextual influence. What's the context? Our surroundings shape our perceptions and decisions, often skewing our understanding of reality, like we talked about the church versus the haunted house. Environmental cues. Subtle cues in our environment can trigger preconceived notions, influencing our behaviors and judgments. And finally, external control. We often attribute our actions to environmental factors, excusing personal responsibility. Oh, I didn't do that. The person cut me off. You know, why did you honk at them? Well, I honked at them because that's how I react. I don't honk at them because they cut me off. So we can look at the situation and the stimulus, and we look at our reaction. And until we take responsibility for the intervening thought patterns that go into the action, then we are misattributing, you know, misattribution of the reason we do things. And we use environmental reasons rather than our own potential faults.
Mm-hmm.
Or not faults, but our good judgment, right? What else do we have on these? We have recency. We talked about recency. Recent events. We give undue weight to recent events, skewing our long-term perspective. So anything that's happened recently, we use that as part of our judgment on things that are happening now, more so than old time. What do we call them? Things that are in the past. Short-term bias. Recency bias leads us to overlook older but potentially more relevant information, and decisions are often based on the most recent information, ignoring historical context. But not only that, recent things are more in the front of our brain, the more in the prefrontal cortex, because we can think about them, which means our prefrontal cortex may have more of an influence over our actions today than our subconscious, right? So our super ego, which is trying to make sure we do things correctly,
mm-hmm.
if we allowed ourselves to feel our values and beliefs more than our present state of mind, maybe our actions would be different. Make any sense?
Sure.
Influence of others, peer pressure, authority figures, media impact are all areas that will impact how we perceive things as well as our own behavior. So the influence of others, authorities, peer pressure, and media impact, meaning social media as well as what we're seeing in the news, may impact how we view things. In fact, when all these news medias come out with talking points on something, it may skew how we're feeling and we don't even know why. We're being hit and bombarded by all this, mm-hmm. all these ideas. Proximity, physical closeness, emotional proximity, and attention bias, where we're focusing our attention right now, recent events, emotional closeness, people we love, they may have more influence over how we act than people that we don't know so well. So it can be an error in judgment based upon that. We talk about the situation, contextual shifts, different situations alter our behavior. We talked about that as well. Role changes, our role in a given situation, leader versus follower. How about judge versus jury versus defendant versus prosecutor will impact how we perceive and react to others, even if it's just a game or a business situation. And in situation attribution, we attribute behavior to situational factors, just like environmental factors, rather than personal traits, and we often misjudge others, meaning that we talk about that, oh, they only did that because of this situation, rather than, no, they did that because they're a good person, a bad person, or because they're a cheater. That, you know, we can sometimes forgive or forget or excuse behavior based upon situations, mm-hmm. rather than say, wait a minute, they took advantage of that situation. Mm-hmm. And sometimes we do that ourselves. You know, oh, it was the situation. I didn't mean to call up my ex-lover. I had been drinking. It was lonely. You had been away for 2 days. You had been away for 15 minutes. It was terrible. I didn't know what to do. I thought you abandoned me. Salience, how strong the situation is. Is it vividness effect? More noticeable and striking information disproportionately impacts our perceptions. How about somebody who's the loud voice? The loud voice may change how we feel about something versus the calm person who's logical. Maybe we're more influenced by emotion. In politics, it seems like people are more influenced by emotion. Let's pull at people's heartstrings. Let's make them angry. Let's motivate them to do something rather than talk logically.
You don't have followers.
Followers if you talk logically. No. If you educate too much, no followers. We have selective attention. So salient features, things that have real, like pop, we can be attracted to it. One of my presentations I did on color talked about having a little red boat in a sea of blue. You are attracted to that little red boat. But if you have 50 little red boats in a sea of blue, it becomes noise. So you can have something that is contrast and pulls your attention, or you can have something that's overwhelming and you ignore. These are things that in a given situation change how we feel.
The experiment of gorilla, you know, also, you know, see the gorilla in the room.
Ah, yeah. The basketball one? Yeah. Follow the basketball, yeah. Anyway, if you haven't ever seen that one, someday look it up. It's called Basketball Gorilla or something like that. It's a good experiment. You got to see how many times they bounce the ball. Stimulus, sensory input, over-reliance on immediate sensory input can distort our understanding of broader context. I'll just talk about that stimulus response. That strong stimuli may provoke an immediate reaction without us thinking. So the stimulus effect is if there's something going on and we're observing that we the stimulus is big and we react quickly from instinct, from emotion, and therefore we're not seeing that's why we did it. But so self-observation is very big in helping fix this. This was interesting, looking at emotional intelligence as potentially a challenge. So emotional intelligence as a challenge, that we have empathy and we misinterpret because we have too much emotional intelligence. And I don't want to use too much emotional intelligence, but it may say that we emphasize and we then can distort objectivity. So I think that would be not over emotional intelligence, but maybe it's misguided emotional intelligence. And maybe that's meaning you're not emotional intelligent, but you feel you are. And then emotional manipulation. If you are emotionally intelligent, you understand the emotion of others, are they using the emotions to manipulate somebody else's behavior? So you can say, I'm really good with emotional intelligence because I use the emotional situation of...
Yeah, and sell many, many resorts.
More and more timeshares. Yeah. So lots of timeshares. Apologize to our timeshare. I'm going to skip those two. We talked about bias. Understanding, I like this. We have misinterpretation because we have limited understanding of others' perspectives, and it leads to misjudgments and conflicts. Overconfidence, overestimate our understanding of a situation, and that can lead to flawed decisions. Complexity reduction. We simplify complex issues to fit our own understanding, and this can result in significant oversights. Again, if we do not understand something, then whatever we see somebody else doing in that situation, we are not only misjudging them, we're misjudging the situation. We can't actually relate to what we're seeing if we don't understand enough. And at the end of this presentation, we have some really good information on this, especially when it comes to relationships. Observation. We have selective observation based upon our understanding. We often see what we expect to see, and we ignore contrary evidence, and this is also a bias. Observer effect. The act of observing can alter the behavior of those being observed, skewing results. And if you remember about that study that was done in a factory years ago?
Which one?
Well, they wanted to see if they could increase productivity in a factory. So they went into an area and they increased the lighting.
Okay.
And they got more productivity. And then 2 weeks later, they're like, okay, let's see if we can lower productivity. And they decreased the lighting to lower than it was before. And guess what? Productivity went up again. And this, that just observing productivity was increasing the productivity.
Yeah.
The light change had little to do with it. So
KPI.
Perception versus reality. Observations are filtered through personal perception, which may not accurately reflect reality. And then finally, we're going to talk about the broken mirror again. What's very important about it, and these are the things that we want us to remember, for us to understand, our personality variables, how we are in our personality and personality-wise will limit not only what we do in our own behavior, but how we perceive others' behavior, because we, unfortunately, I think many people think everyone's like they are, or no one's like me. I'm so different, right? Subconscious programming. Our own state of consciousness, you know, what our ego's doing, our innate drives, and the, what did I miss there? I think we got it all there. We got the ego, the superego, and the id, and how that impacts how we see a situation and how we see others' behavior in that situation. And when we realize that all those things impact our understanding and our ability to see what's truly going on, then we can say, how do we fix that? How do we fix it? So can we repair the mirror? We need to realize the impact our biases and emotional state have on our perceptions of reality. We need to understand the false conclusions that we reach as we judge the stimulus by what we only understand. We can't judge it by something we don't understand. If we also believe that we only recognize what we first know, we have to seek to know more in order to judge things in reality. Finally, try a rose-colored window rather than a mirror. How do we not look at everything as ourself? One, fill yourself with good emotions, loving thoughts, positive perspectives, and knowledge of the reality that we hope to receive. And this is the most important thing. If you want a good relationship, study what a good relationship is. Study so you recognize the traits of a good relationship. You can't have a good relationship if you don't understand first what a good relationship is.
Yeah, no, so the one important point is the attitude for be curious versus judgment. So if you have to put the glasses for be curious or some situation, you can see a real the black and white. But if you go to the judgment glasses at the beginning and the conversation when the study, you don't learn a lot because you're just blocking, you see completely the picture.
So we block what we see. We block the complete picture by our own biases, by our own judgment.
Mm-hmm.
And the way to unblock is to become more objective by first researching and understanding what, and I'm going to go back to the relationship piece. In order to have a good relationship, We have to understand what a good relationship is. And I think that's the strong point of this whole message today. Fill yourself with good emotions, loving thoughts, positive perspectives, and knowledge of the reality that we hope to receive. You need to first understand what you want as your objective in order to recognize what pieces of that objective are already being met and what needs to be worked on to get you to that goal of having a good relationship. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
You're listening to 90 Day Soulmate with the relationship engineers, Jim Golnick and Lisette Guevara, only on LA Talk Radio.